Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
We continue our series of apartheid X-Files, which we have started very recently, and we're going to be doing until December. We'll take a bit of a break from that because I think it is quite depressing. Today we're going to be focusing on two stories, but we'll start here. We'll start with the ANC's testimony at the TRC. Some of you may remember it very well. Some of you may not have even, you know, recalled it at all. But we want to take you back there, and we'll close off with the story of Dulcy September. That's going to be just after 9:30. But let's go to that ANC testimony at the TRC.
Apartheid X-Files.
On Point of View.
Wasn't this blurring of the distinction between hard and soft targets in direct contravention of those subsections of the Geneva Convention?
What we did was to recommit ourselves to intensifying the struggle, to saying that some of the restraints that we had placed on ourselves as to how we conduct the struggle would need to be relaxed. And in particular, I would say then that where a military installation was in a commercial or civilian area, that restraint that we had placed on ourselves had to be relaxed. The tactics of the apartheid regime were drawing us into a morass where the rules of the games were reducing and were likely to reduce an honorable struggle and besmear it. And we tried to avoid it.
In fact, in waging the armed struggle, we broke very few eggs to make a huge omelette.
It was the Air Force target. Had that bomb went off at 4:30, it would have caught the majority of the people, would have been, though overwhelming majority would have been from that place. But it went off prematurely. And it had been carefully reconnoitred. So there was our problem. And the target was selected, not directed at the civilian population, but at the security force members.
There was a mistake that occurred that particular evening. It wasn't as filled with the security force members as had been seen in previous reconnaissance. They believed that the bar would be full, which was very often the occasion. So what we have been consistent with is the targeting of the security forces in the same way as Church Street. But in war, in conflict, of course, one can't always be 100% efficient, effective in an operation.
The African National Congress unreservedly apologizes to all civilians who lost their lives, whether in crossfire or any other circumstances. Our aim has never been to attack civilians. And whatever the intensity of the struggle, where civilians have died, we believe that it is appropriate that in our country today, in the interests of reconciliation and unity, that we should apologize, and we do so.
How does the ANC justify the usage of landmines on public roads in view of its having signed the Geneva Protocol?
Landmines were used in areas that were extensively patrolled by the South African Defence Force and also by the area protection units called, known by the term commandos. Most of those operations, the man-laying operations, were in the border areas, the areas that were patrolled very, very effectively. I think it is common knowledge to the commission here that part of the fence was electrified. And in most instances, it was on the lethal mode. And there were gaps. And where they didn't have the fence, that's where most of the patrolling took place. The idea was to try and impede, reduce the intensity of these patrols. The African National Congress realized that after the few incidents where civilians were caught, the president called us in and asked us to put a stop to this method of operation. I gave the instructions to all our forces to stop using the landmine.
With our necklaces, we shall liberate this country.
If necklacing it was at any stage part of the struggle, doesn't it in itself defeat the idea of a just war?
On hindsight, if we delayed in the judgment of any person too long in appealing for the end of this practice and to condemn it, then on hindsight, yes, we made a mistake. We should have done it earlier. It had to be reacted to as something that the masses had taken up under conditions of extreme brutalization and repression. And then you sought to channel that energy into proper forms of political action and unity with the armed actions that we were undertaking. So that explains the approach that we had to take. It would be an extremely foolhardy leader of the ANC of 1984-85, I think is the period of the first necklacing, to have stood up and said, this is wrong, out with it.
Was Mrs. Mandela acting as an ANC member during the 1980s? And if so, was she subject to any organizational discipline?
It's correct for me to point out that the late President Oliver Tambo did send a message home intended to reach Comrade Winnie and others to get them to distance themselves from this method of dealing with enemy agents.
Young Masai, kill a man, shoot to kill. Young Masai, kill the poor, the farmer.
We need to talk about African tradition. There's no such thing as this. Was not a statement. It's not a statement of any kind, and wouldn't be read by any of this African youth as a statement. In Xhosa, this particular form of art, similar, is called Ikwijo. And Ikwijo is not a statement. It's not a political statement. It's a chant. You use it to miss. For instance, Amakwenkwe, you know, when they are going over long distances, they would be doing this thing. It's not a statement. You see, part of the problem with this is that somebody who comes from outside of that African culture interpreted it. And indeed, when you then write the Peter Mukaba said, kill the boer, kill a farmer, he didn't. In the sense of a statement which represents policy. And it would not have been taken as a statement that represents policy. So there's no ANC policy which says, kill a farmer, kill a boer, and all that. But there would be amakwitch of all sorts. You have a Zulu song, not quite a kwitch, but it's traditional songs. Now, it's not a statement. It's not a statement I'm making that I will never visit Zululand. It's a song. I don't think we really... I really don't think that the this... Certainly, I don't know Peter, whether Peter is here. He likes doing these things. And you could do different ones and you could translate them. There are different chants. And they would be saying different things. Different things about the struggle. This particular one was picked out, as I say, and interpreted from outside of African culture and presented as a political statement. It never was.
Would I be correct in saying that what you've communicated to us is more or less what we have in many, in most traditional cultures, also Afrikaans songs, like Simbamba, Mama Sekenki, Draai sy nek om, gooi om in die sloot, trap op sy kop en is hy dood, but you rock the baby to sleep. That's what you're saying to us.
There was a plan by the ANC at that stage to assassinate Dr. Ptelis. With regard to that particular issue, it is true that a unit of the ANC did at some point take a decision to carry out an operation of that kind. When the ANC headquarters found that out, it countermanded that decision, and that operation was never carried out. It is also true, Chairperson, that especially the Department of Military Intelligence made it its business to sustain the story that, in fact, there was an ANC decision to assassinate Dr. Buthelezi when there wasn't, and did all manner of things to make sure that Dr. Buthelezi was convinced of this, and so that they could take particular measures in response to what was then seen as a threat, but which, as I say, Chairperson, a threat which, in fact, did not exist. I'm making the point, Chairperson, that we didn't regard the IFP, its members, as legitimate military targets. And therefore, at no stage were any decisions taken to attack the IFP as IFP. I'm quite certain that the overwhelming majority of members of the IFP have never been involved in this violence. They didn't like it, didn't want it. In much the same way that the overwhelming majority of members of the ANC would not want this violence. It's not... There wasn't a situation in which two members of the ANC in Kwamash, one member of the ANC, one member of INGAT, one stands up and says, I, member of the IFP, I'm in favor of a federal South Africa. And this ANC one says, no. We don't like this federation business. I'm in favor of a unitary South Africa. They disagree, and then they draw guns on each other and shoot. No such thing. Organized gangs. Political. Were responsible for this violence.
And then on Wednesday, it was the turn of the National Party. F.W. de Klerk started off with what Desmond Tutu later called a handsome apology and a conditional acceptance of responsibility for the actions of the security forces.
apartheid was wrong. I apologize in my capacity as leader of the National Party to the millions of South Africans who suffered the wrenching disruption of forced removals in respect of their homes, businesses and land, who over the years suffered the shame of being arrested for past law offenses, who over the decades and indeed centuries suffered the indignities and humiliation of racial discrimination, who for a long time were prevented from exercising their full democratic rights in the land of their birth, who were unable to achieve their full potential because of job reservation, and who in any other way suffered as a result of discriminatory legislation and policies. Let me state clearly that the National Party and I accept full responsibility for all our policies, decisions and actions. We stand by our security forces who implemented such policies and decisions and all reasonable interpretations thereof.
But what exactly was de Klerk taking responsibility for? That became the real question.
I think it would have pleased everybody if I said it was our official policy, but I can't speak an untruth to satisfy the call for blood which there is. I can only speak the truth as I know it. It has never been the policy of the government, the National Party, that people should be murdered, should be assassinated. I've said that clearly. Such an instruction is in conflict with the policy as it has been at all times within my knowledge. Once again, depending who issued the orders, it would definitely be unauthorized and mala fide. I would firstly like to emphasize on this question, as with the others, that obviously that is absolutely unacceptable. It falls outside the parameters of anything which was ever authorized or intended by government policy, government decisions, or any reasonable interpretation. Surely when people commit a crime, they try to cover it up. And if it wasn't for amnesty, these people, if these facts are true, should have been charged.
Senior members of the South African police, implicating also senior SADF officers, have applied for amnesty for a number of murders committed by SAP operatives when they supplied faulty hand grenades to COSAS members in the course of 1985. At least 8 persons were killed and 7 maimed. This operation was authorized and approved by the former Commissioner of Police and the Minister.
Whoever authorized that was guilty of a very gruesome and totally unacceptable decision. It was wrong, it wasn't part of the policy, and whoever authorized it was mala fide and was acting against the interest of South Africa. Can I say, however, that I don't know whether this allegation that a minister ordered it was tested. We are dealing once again here with allegations made by people in amnesty applications who are trying to pass the buck. I
I really can't give you a very informed opinion. My recollection of that was that, as I can remember, a case was made out that Minister, then Chief Minister Buthelezi's life was under threat. Many of his leading figures have been targeted. There's need for well-trained VIP protection to effectively ensure that the ANC would not succeed in strategies to assassinate, murder him and other leading figures, and that on that basis permission was given for an operation which would entail the expenditure of funds to train such people to perform that duty.
The people who took part in the Kwamakuta killing were not members of the VIP unit. They were members of the offensive unit, and they were not involved in a war situation, as you earlier described.
And therefore,
they attacked a house and they killed 13 people, most of whom are women and children.
And therefore, they were guilty of a heinous crime. I'm not defending them.
In November 1989, Dirk Coetzee informed the world, and I suppose the clerk, of the existence of Vlakplaas, a police unit on a farm outside Pretoria, which specialized in assassinating government opponents.
Look, your position, if I understand it correctly, is that Vlakplaas is an aberration like a lot of these other things that were debated this morning. And what you were, the explanation, as I understand it, that you were proffering, was that it must have been an officer or two or whatever, lower down the hierarchy, somewhere below these generals, who were doing this exercise, this Vlakplaas exercise, entirely on their own bat.
That is my impression.
How reasonable is that explanation? Well, that a lowly officer, somewhere below these generals, was responsible for this entire aberration that led to all these things that we know are being disclosed.
There's nothing reasonable in crime. It's unreasonable. I believe what the generals say to me. And therefore, I don't offer it as an explanation. I offer it as an example where I have reason to believe, based on the accounts of four people to me, that specifically in the case of Vlakplaas, fundamental information with regard to totally unacceptable things for which we are all so sorry and which abhor all of us so much, have taken place without the knowledge of superiors.
The most obvious generals de Klerk would have asked about Vlakplaas are generals Basie Smit, Krappies Engelbrecht, Johan van der Merwe, Nick van Rensburg and Johan Leroux. We have learnt from the affidavits of several Vlakplaas men that General Basie Smit was a regular visitor to Vlakplaas. They even had to keep his personal bottle of Chivas Regal whiskey for him. General Krappies Engelbrecht, we know, has a long history of helping Vlakplaas cover up their legal problems. And Johan van der Merwe was involved in at least one Vlakplaas operation. The head of the ANC's legal department, Matthews Poser, remarked afterwards that de Klerk sat in Pretoria and knew everything that went on in the ANC's Quattro camp in faraway Angola, but nothing about Vlakplaas, 10 kilometers away from him. In the days of P.W. Botha, the State Security Council was the highest decision-making body, made up of cabinet ministers and generals. Goossen showed de Klerk minutes of a State Security Council meeting in 1986, which de Klerk attended, where a proposal for a third force was discussed. It was agreed that this third force should have the capacity to, quote, wipe out terrorists effectively, unquote, be very unpopular, and, I quote again, counter the underminers with their own methods, unquote. In other words, terrorist methods.
There was never any reference after that meeting, at any time, of the third force in any discussion that I can recall, except for this continued discussion on do we establish another overt force or not. There was never any reference that I can recall in any way whatsoever of our policy being using terrorist methods. Yes, firm action. Yes. Using and applying extraordinary measures. Yes, going underground. Yes, spying. Yes, having covert actions. Having a state of emergency. Putting people in camps without trial. All that, yes. But not murdering people, not assassination. It was never part of the policy.
How would a reasonable person interpret those directives, those statements? Would a reasonable person, member of the security forces, who is enjoined to use the strongest possible methods to combat the revolution, not interpret what was being said to authorize killings and assassinations? And that's the question.
As far as I know, not having been directly involved then, there were at all times general rules and guidelines. And the general rules and guidelines within my total experience of how the country was governed, also in the period when I was an ordinary minister, was that we were not above the law. That was the ethos of our approach. The recent information of atrocities I find as shocking and abhorrent as anybody else. It came to me as just a shocking revelation as to anyone else.
Afterwards, truth commissioners expressed their deep disappointment with the National Party attitude.
To make that apology and then to negate it by, I mean, the way that I feel sorry for him, that, I mean, maybe he didn't know. But he didn't know. I told him, and people were killed. We went and told them. I mean, to tell me that he didn't know. I'm sad. I'm sad because I had hoped that maybe he didn't know. No, maybe he didn't know.
As you can hear there, that's the voice of the late Archbishop Desmond Tutu. That audio, that entire audio with the ANC testimonies at the TRC, it was courtesy of the SABC. And we started off with the clip also that gave us another apartheid X-file, which was of the unfortunate death of Dulcie September. And that audio was courtesy of France 24. It's exactly 10 o'clock. That brings us to the end of the show. We'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.